And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, July 10th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Tropical Storm Friday, Melody.
Oh, man, oh, man. Did we get the rain today?
Woo!
And I don't know if you're getting it up there in your area.
We sure are. Been pelted twice already.
Well, we got it early morning, and, you know, it always... I don't know what it is since I moved down here. Anytime a tropical storm goes through, I end up outside with my raincoat on, messing with something outside. And it happened again today. So, you know, getting soaking wet, trying to fix something, you know, went a little wonky around the house and so forth. And it's just like, geez, I'm just glad there was no thunder, but a lot of rain, and rain that we needed. So, but I just didn't want it to come all at once like it did. So, no, not very strong winds. I don't know if you had any winds up there.
Not certainly not tropical storm. I think maybe just 20, 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Nothing too serious.
We might have had a little bit stronger than that, but for some reason, the direction that it came in, it I couldn't tell. You know, I saw the tops of the trees blowing, and that was it. Didn't hear it. You could see the wind or the rain going sideways, but other than that, it didn't seem like it was very windy at all. But anyway, gold today kind of had a, I don't know if you'd want to say
it. It was a sideways day.
It was a sideways day for gold, too. The tropical storm affected gold. Had a high of 1811, but in the New York spot price aftermarket, we're looking at 1800, down $3.40. Silver was up 5 pennies at 18.79. Platinum was down 2, 826. Palladium was up $29 at 2036. Let's see. The USDX today was down 14 at 96.65. Crude oil was up 0.85 at 40.47. And the markets were under pressure prior to open today, but they had a pretty big reversal. I'm really not sure quite why. The Dow was up 368 points at 26,074. The NASDAQ was up 69 at 10,617. The S&P was up 32 at 3,185. 10-year yield, 0.63%. I know they had great auctions yesterday. A lot of buyers, is my understanding. So perhaps, you know, that had an impact on the positive today. The Asian markets were lower. European markets were higher overnight. So, yeah, I wasn't really sure. I guess the financials lifted the S&P a little bit. And, you know...
Yeah, you want to hear my theory?
What's your theory?
I'm actually surprised that the later news in the day about Trump saying the U.S.-China relationship is severely damaged didn't result in a reversal of these paper market gains. But I think, once again, we've got the results of this algorithmic computerized high-frequency trading system that showed that, well, I'm not sure if it was remdesivir report came out today showing that it doesn't prevent the coronavirus, but in people who are seriously ill, it doesn't prevent death, but it results in less deaths. And I'm just guessing that there was some good news in a bunch of computer algorithms that said, good news, that's good news. Let's send the prices up a little bit more. Anyway.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, you know, we saw it in March and April on the downside. We saw it. And you know what? You have the Fed in there pumping into buying corporate debt and allows these corporations to go out. We talked about it, was it yesterday? We mentioned Berkshire Hathaway. You got the Fed in there buying their debt, and they're going out buying energy companies at the same time. So, you know, it's all dog and pony show. It's all fake. It's not really based on any economy. How many times do you guys hear me say this? And, you know, I don't know what else. See, I would think it would be a little bit differently. I would have thought that if President Trump came out and said that the relationship, I guess we're going to talk about a little bit later, about no phase two, that would have sent the market crashing. But then on the other hand, everyone has begun to distrust China. So maybe they think that, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, I guess you could spin it in different ways, but yeah.
Or that it's already built in
to the market. Yeah, or that it's already built in. So, but anyway, let's see. Why am I having problems with my computer? There we go. But, you know, and there's more news. I mean, some of the headlines on the virus, whether you believe it or not, I mean, these numbers is what's running this country. You have Vegas bars were ordered to close again. You have Florida County, a 33% infection rate. Phoenix beginning to sound like New York, nearly out of morgue space. South Carolina's besieged, Alabama in trouble, Mississippi crisis, Atlanta to reactivate a makeshift hospital, growing chorus pushes for renewed shutdown orders. You know, so again, this isn't, it doesn't sound, and Dr. Gottlieb, he was former, what was he? Was he the FDA?
FDA
chair. You know, he's being floated around, I think, instead of Fauci on all the cable programs, CNBC, well, all of them, basically. But he says, I saw a number, he said like one in 150 people are infected. You know, you don't see that anywhere because that would kind of make people a little unnerved. But so again, and all of that, no impact whatsoever. So people aren't buying it. People don't think it's a real case and that we're not going to go back to March. And that's a sad thing to think, whether you believe it's... I think the markets are going to go back to what happened in March. You are going to see them drop 3,000 points again a day. And because the reality of these markets is just not... It's just not reality. You have the Dallas Fed president. You know, I mean, what they say is, you know, it gives you an idea. But, I mean, we know the Fed is going to be doing everything possible to stimulate everything that can be stimulated. But, hey, they're coming out. The Dallas Fed president, Kaplan, Federal Reserve, and is he Congress too?
No.
He's the Dallas Fed president, Robert Kaplan, said the most important thing for the economy now is wearing protective face coverings. But we know that doesn't even work 100%. Kaplan said that while monetary and fiscal policy are very important, they're not as important right now as they're doing a good job flattening the curve on this virus. If we do that, we'll grow faster. I mean, that's just all... does he really think... that we're going to really fall for that? If they do a good job of flattening the curve on the virus, we're going to grow out of our problem? Are they all nuts? Or maybe it really isn't real. Who knows, Dave?
Well, Kaplan also said that the primary economic policy from here is broad mask wearing. and good education of the healthcare protocols. So perhaps, Melody, the next round of Fed stimulus may be the manufacture of all the PPE that hospitals across the country, and perhaps even the world, are going to be needing over the next 6 months. That will put a little bit of, action behind all their words. I mean, again, his logic is, if we all wore a mask, it would substantially slow the transmission of the disease, and we would grow faster. We would have a lower unemployment rate, and we'd be less likely to slow more of our reopenings. Interesting comments coming out of the Fed. It makes me wonder if there was some sort of personal impact, family member or close friend or perhaps a close colleague of Kaplan's that has him coming out, or perhaps it's one of the mantras that they're now going to be pitching, the Fed, that is, in a policy making sense, and more explicitly tying actions to the containment of the virus. Now, it also could mean that they see that with the multi-trillions of dollars that they've pumped into the economy, that there's still just another, not there, we're just another black swan away from that crash that Melody talked about that will hearken us back to March. And possibly worse. So it's very interesting. I think if we're going to start seeing more Fed officials talk about this now that Kaplan has come out.
Well, I don't think the mask is going to do anything to help our economy. So I think his logic, his reasoning behind that is flawed. The masks are not going to help with the economy. The economy, we were in a recession in February prior to any closing in March. So, that was a buildup. I mean, you don't go backwards, do you, Dave? You can't go backwards. You can't close down your economy in the end of March and April and then say we started recession in February. The buildup was prior to February. So the economy was sinking anyway. Tax cuts only help for a short period of time. And then you have inflation growing. And again, we go back to Reagan. Look at his huge tax cuts. He had, 123% increase in inflation. That's not chopped liver there. So again, it's because we never came out of every recession we ever came out of it was pumped out of through government and federal funds, stimulus, multi-corporations buying back their shares. Look what happened to, what was the other company? Was it Walgreens that said they weren't, or was Walgreens going to cut dividends, or were they cutting back their buybacks, Dave?
I forget.
Well, that was one of them. And if it wasn't them, it was somebody else who says that they were going to cut back their dividends. And even so, if they cut back their dividends, I'm sure they're not going to be buying back their shares. Yeah, but Walgreens, I think they were one where they got the Fed buying their debt. So, it's just, I wouldn't want to be on that boat. I wouldn't want to be on that paper boat as we continue to go through what we face, whether you believe it or not. But, the IEA, they predict oil demand should rebound sharply. Well, yeah, it's going to rebound sharply. If we have an economy around the world that rebounds sharply. They said the demand for crude should rebound over the next 3 months as economic activity resumes. That assessment comes with bloated stockpiles will diminish as OPEC and its allies persevere with production cuts. The forecast warned, however, that the outlook would be derailed by the upsurge of the virus. So a barrel of West Texas Intermediate for August delivery dropped to 38.54 in the wake of the report. The IEA predicted that the bloated inventories will diminish as OPEC and its allies persevere with the vast production cuts. So I think I already said that. But, yeah, it's, so we saw oil fall a little bit today and go up at the end. But
it did jump back up. Over $40.
Yeah.
Oil global demand is on track still to slump by 8 million barrels a day. It's 8% this year as lockdowns and the economic contraction reduce the need for products, especially like jet fuel, also gasoline for cars. Though they're reporting it's not as bad as anticipated as recently as last month, when the agency projected a drop of 400,000 more barrels a day. That is 8.3 million instead of the 7.9. So, we'll see. The IEA boosted its assessment for demand for the second quarter by 1.5 million barrels a day. That's still roughly a 17% drop in the same period from last year. So, again, it's assuming, if there's a revival in economic activity, worldwide consumption should pick up by about 14% over this quarter. That seems like a awfully optimistic assessment, Melody, especially coming off a 9-year low in the supply of 87 million barrels a day last month.
Yeah, I know. Again, it's they turn all these stories as they want them to be optimistic, and I guess they'll say anything and do anything. Here's one even for the hedge funds are saying rising debt. Raising risk for bonds. Well, duh. the bond market is probably one of the biggest bubbles out there. And you have this flood of debt being sold around the world. Of course, it's raising risks for bond buyers. The world's largest publicly listed hedge fund firm, the Man Group, came out and confirmed that. Companies around the globe have sold. Oh, we're in break. Oh, wow. That was quick. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Financial Survival. Yeah, I was fixing my mic, and yeah, my tongue didn't work that right. Anyway, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website, DGScoins.com. What it is I have Drudge Report up on my screen, and there is this really scary picture of Depp. I don't know if anybody sees it, a Johnny Depp. And I guess he's going through a divorce or going through court or whatever and so forth. And I got to cover up his face because every time I look at it, it scares me. He is really creepy. And I don't know. It's what happened. That's what money does to you, folks. So, you know, if you don't have a lot, you're blessed. You know, because you get too much money, you get these millions and billions of dollars, and it messes with your mind. So, anyway.
Yeah. I thought you were going to talk about Roger Stone's Nixon tattoo.
I know.
That's a tad creepy, too, I might say. That's up there in the Drudge Report.
I know. I saw that, too. Nixon. Who in the world would tattoo... Now, I don't know if that's a real tattoo on his back.
Oh, I believe it is.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know. It's a nice picture of Nixon, though. It's a good tattoo. The artist did very well, considering that was probably done, unless he did that when he was in jail.
But yeah, that's an old one. That's an old one. Nixon's his chief hero.
Oh.
Boy, that picture of Depp is creepy. Oh, that barely looks like him.
I know, and I'll tell you what, when you read some of the things that he's done, I mean, anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about finances, and we're here to talk about DGScoins.com. Visit our website and sign up for our weekly newsletter, and of course you can listen to these radio programs archived on a daily basis. So with that, let's go ahead and move on. Heading into the break, we were talking about the Man Group, the world's largest publicly listed hedge fund firm. And companies around the globe have sold over $2 trillion of bonds this year. Amazing. A 56% jump from the same period last year, and a record. Government and state-related agencies have also raised $1.6 trillion this year to fund stimulus spending. And again, the year, Dave, drum roll, please. This is the most since 2009. Man Group portfolio manager Lisa Chu warned since the market sell-off in March, the supply could be easily absorbed by demand as investors added risk back at cheaper valuations, but we think we may now be close to a tipping point. And the Man Group joins other big funds such as Oaktree Capital Management in warning that these markets could turn after the steep rally. And so we know that since March, the Federal Reserve has unveiled unprecedented steps, buying corporate bonds, risk assets from U.S. stocks to junk bonds. You know, all that soared. What's going to happen when they stop?
Mm-hmm.
When they stop getting their drug, what's going to happen, Dave?
Yeah, they're going to have significant withdrawal, and then some. I mean, it's we know there are all these fears about the economic recovery taking a lot longer than expected, and that's stoking concerns, particularly in bond markets, that markets could turn on a dime. Chu also said risk accumulation appears now back to the highs. The risk from such a large amount of debt being sold globally is that the positioning of the buyers of that debt becomes so crowded that there may be no marginal buyer left. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, we have a solution to that dilemma. It's called gold and silver. As Melody likes to say, call us. Discount Gold Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. We'll tell you more.
Mortgage bailouts, that number, you're beginning to see that decline a little bit for the second straight week. But borrowers who got in earliest saw their plans expire. More borrowers, however, are getting extensions of those initial three-month plans, providing the or proving that the pain in the market is not over yet. As of Tuesday, the volume of loans in active forbearance in which borrowers are allowed to delay their monthly payments fell by a little over 400,000 from the previous week. Roughly 4.1 million loans. 4.1 million loans were in forbearance, representing almost 8% of all active mortgages, down from 8.6.
Gosh, that's a lot.
It is a lot. And, you know, we talked earlier this week is a lot of people, probably not in this program, they can't make their monthly payments. They're breaking it up in several payments. They're getting more and more behind. You know, they finally get 1 month paid up, and then they're right back to the next month. They can't get a handle on it. So we are going to see a lot of defaults in these mortgages. And by category, about 6% of all mortgages backed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and 11.6% of all FHA, VA loans are in forbearance plans. So anything else you'd like to add to that, Dave?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I just note, you know, the Mortgage Banker Association says that more than a quarter, 26%, of loans in forbearance were extensions, these three-month extensions, according to their account. That's for the essentially the last week of June. That share has been increasing steadily for the past 3 weeks. That's a significant count. I suspect a team of summer interns is paging through all those numbers, Melody. Mm.
Well, the U.S. producer prices, they unexpectedly fell in June as we had rising costs for energy goods were offset by weakness in services. Economists say that pointing to subdued inflation, that should allow the Federal Reserve to keep pumping that money into the economy to arrest a downward spiral. Yes.
Yes.
Keep pumping that taxpayer money into the system.
This is where Todd comes in with the fireworks.
Still, deflation, they say, remains unlikely as the economy battles depressed demand is caused by the pandemic. The Labor Department also showed that underlying producer inflation did tick up a little bit last month. So, you know, inflation, deflation. Government wants inflation. They're going to get it because they're the ones who create it and they need it, Dave.
It's true. We know the Fed tracks the core personal consumption expenditures price index, the PCE, for its 2% inflation target. The core PCE price index increased 1% on a year-to-year basis in May. It's the smallest advance since December 2010. Now we'll find out June's PCE at the end of this month. However, there's another, we believe, much more accurate reality reflective inflation number that is followed maintained, I should say, by ShadowStats.com founder John Williams, who believes the government continues to grossly, in fact, underestimate inflation. Now, he sees consumer prices, albeit measured by the CPIU. It's a broader index than the PCE or the PPI, using methodologies the government used to use in the 1980s and 90s. He sees real inflation as being closer to between 3.5% and 7%. Melody.
Wow. There's new data from the Fed that shows a decline in revolving credit debt for the third month in a row. Revolving credit debt dropped to $996 billion in May. It's the lowest since the Great Recession's decline to $833 billion in May of 2011. Revolving credit primarily includes credit cards, but also personal lines of credit and home equity lines of credit. So it's interesting to see this drop, Dave, I think, because they have no income coming in. So you'd think that they would be using their credit cards for a lot of situations. But then again, they're getting a lot of government money, too. They are getting unemployment. They are getting the $600. They did get the $1,200. So maybe that's why there wasn't a need. I don't know if you think that has anything to do with it or not.
I think a better measure will be how these numbers look in September, at the end of the summer, particularly if there's another surge or recurrence or however you want to characterize it. I think it's just still too early to tell, at least to be confident in these numbers and where they're heading. I mean, it's still an awful lot of debt, either way, it's not a good situation.
You know, they say that the Fed's balance sheet has dipped. Assets have dipped below $7 trillion for the first time in almost 2 months. The $88.3 billion drop in the week to July 8th was the fourth in a row, taking the total decline over the last month to almost $250 billion. That past month's decline has owed mainly to the declining usage of the Fed's emergency services. Of course, I'm not quite sure, Dave, how that can be.
Well, it's possible. Go ahead. You want to continue?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. They raised the stock market up. So yeah. I mean, their whole point in doing what they're doing is to keep the stock market up. Nothing else. So once the stock market has come back to the degree that it has, I guess it would be not as necessary for them to put in as much until it falls again.
I agree with you. I agree. With liquidity, I mean, the Fed's pumped so much liquidity into the market that not as much has been needed over the last month. And so it's not a surprise that, you know, their repo program or their dollar swap program that they rolled out in March and April, I guess, are sort of falling off. Now, again, I think, you know, we'll have to wait and see if that turns around at the end of the summer or in the fall, or if this is a trend. But certainly, I mean, oh boy. Do you see the Fed's balance sheet significantly dropping beyond this in the next few months?
Well, I don't know how I could. I mean, they had to raise rates in order to drop their balance sheet the last time. So this time, I don't get it. I mean, once you have, you know, the seven, well, I'm just going to use round numbers. If you have $7 trillion on your balance sheet, you can, and you're putting, I don't know, $500 billion a month. If you stop that, you still have the $7
trillion. Yeah.
I mean right. So it really doesn't even – I suppose it could drop a couple of $100 billion, but no, I'm not buying it. You know, I'm not buying it. It's you know, they might have got a little bit of a reprieve because the stock market did go higher. But no, it's – I don't think they could stop.
Well,
I mean, they just started buying corporate debt just
– Yeah, May.
Yeah. So
– Well, and then you have these foreign central banks, the Bank of Japan, the ECB. They've been allowing them to roll off as their local institutions aren't clamoring for as many dollars. And that's part of the Fed success story in stabilizing markets, particularly here, but not just here. And it's effectively weaning off its primary dealers. These are 24+ major banks, weaning them off the repo operations. Apparently they're making them a little bit more expensive than they were when they first rolled it out. In fact, the Fed said this week that it has no funds outstanding in those programs. And that's a big difference from March when the Fed offered $5 trillion to put out the fire in the funding markets that had spiked as high as 9 and 10%. But I agree with you, Melody. It's not intuitive, or it would be counterintuitive to think that the balance sheet is going to fall off
significantly,
much more substantially than where it is now, at least over the next few months.
Well, you know, you're right. The Fed said that there's no funds outstanding in these repo markets and so forth. Well, you know what? They changed the regulations so much. So, yeah, I could see where maybe the banks got to the point where, you know, the amount of funds that they were using could have dropped because they changed all the regulations.
Mm. Yeah.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. It's 800-375-4188. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's see, where do we want to go? Well, I mean, it's no big surprise Congress is preparing for a stimulus debate. I don't know what they're going to debate. They already have it down. It's been down for a month or so, 2 months. You know, Democrats want $3 trillion for the price tag, and old Mitch McConnell is looking at it. First, I heard President Trump, and I thought McConnell had initially said no way, that they were looking for maybe $1 trillion. I mean, it's just all over the page. So I guess they need to round up to see how many more of their buddies need those multi-million-dollar bailouts before they make any final decision on how much they're going to do. But, you know, then they'll throw the citizens a few paltry little peanuts.
Right.
So we'll all feel grateful. People will feel grateful and committed and, you know, thinking that, oh, the system works.
2 weeks ago, the president said, I'm going to outbid the Democrats, something more than the Democrats are willing to offer. I'm beginning to think what Congress and the White House need here is an auctioneer. we need an auctioneer, and let's see how courageous they are then. Have them on the floor of a joint session of Congress. Yeah. Bidding starts at $1 trillion, ladies and gentlemen. Do I hear 1.5, blah, 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 blah. So I'm gonna see if it stops at $3 trillion, where they're talking about now.
Yeah. Well, they got to save some because, you know, this won't be the last one, that's for sure. And we'll see if any of this has any infrastructures built in, or is it just a way to keep, you know, companies going.
It doesn't look like it.
No. It doesn't. So that means there'll be another one coming. So, well, I guess the U.S. is ready to put tariffs. I mean, we've talked about this before. It's been a while. But now the U.S. is set to put tariffs on over $500 billion on French goods. Now, there's been a dispute between the U.S. and France over taxes on technology giants. And so it took another move forward today when Washington announcing details of the tariffs on the $500 million to $700 million of goods. Is that billion or millions? Billions?
I believe it's million.
All right. Which isn't a lot anymore. Half a billion.
Yeah, when you compare it to China.
Yeah.
Well, talking 200, 500, 700 billion.
The duties aren't expected to come into effect, though, until French authorities start collecting taxes on Amazon, Google, and Facebook. That's so funny. Anyway, it's not only tech companies caught in the crosshairs of geopolitics. Global banks that are operating in Hong Kong face huge regulatory headaches, too. And, of course, we talked about that the other day as the banks try to follow China's new security law. While staying on the right side of possible U.S. sanctions, the tariff list to be released reportedly will be in the ballpark of $500 to $700 million, as mentioned before. So, you know, I mean, what do they got? Wine, cheese, champagne.
I know. Perfume.
Perfume. Parfum. Yeah.
Parfum.
So, yeah. So, again, it just... I almost think, Date, that these tariffs don't mean anything anymore because the word and the threat It's just thrown about, and it doesn't have the same impact I think it did in the beginning of this administration. I think it worked at that time, and I think it probably moved a lot at that time, but anymore. And perhaps it's because at the end of this administration, and no one knows, being in the election year, I don't think it has the impact it once did. But
well, almost, it's like a cry wolf situation. And, I mean, I think that therein lies the crux of what you're saying, that it's really comes down to a credibility follow-through issue. So, although, you know, we have seen, I mean, a number of European countries have already announced plans to implement this digital services tax. Number of them, they're Austria, France, Spain, Hungary, Italy, Turkey, and the UK. So, and the OECD has been trying to find agreement among almost 140 countries on how to address multinationals, particularly these big tech countries, Google countries. That was a Freudian slip. companies with the GDP of a couple of small countries.
The thing of it is, that's, you're right, these tech companies, they'll throw out a couple $100 million and so forth, and, you know, it's no big deal. You know, just, it's easier just to pay off the headache than to fight it or anything like that. You know, but one thing about these European countries, they say they have already announced plans. Well, now they have to collect it.
Yeah, that's right.
But again, I think tech companies will more or less be happy to pay just to get them off their back and be done with it, because it's just peanuts to them.
Well, if it's the worst, if you're not going to regulate our speech, then, you know, we'll find a couple billion every year for you.
United Airlines and pilots, they reached an agreement. The union represents 13,000 pilots. And they reached a tentative agreement on voluntary furloughs and early retirement packages. It's the company's latest effort to slash costs. And United is the last of the four biggest U.S. carriers to reach such an agreement with pilots. The deal comes as chances for recovery in air travel grow more remote as cases of the virus spike, and states like New York and New Jersey issue quarantine orders for some arriving travelers in a bid to stop the disease. The details, of course, weren't immediately disclosed, but it's likely to resemble pilots' early retirement packages that were offered by American, Delta, and Southwest, Dave.
Yeah, the United agreement was announced the day after the airline warned 36,000 employees, or as Melody mentioned on Monday's program, 40% of its workforce. That they would or could, anyway, be furloughed when the terms of federal aid that prohibit job cuts expire on October 1st. How just pleasant of them. We kept you on long enough so we don't have to pay our stinking loan back to the taxpayers. But after that, see you later, loyal workers. And that included furloughs of more than 2,200 United pilots.
And don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Yeah, how about it? Yeah. How about it?
Well, President Trump said today that he isn't thinking about a possible next stage of the U.S. trade deal with China.
What?
Yeah, we mentioned it earlier in the program that the relationship between the two nations had been severely damaged. I think China came out the other day and said the same thing.
Well, certainly, yeah, with their stock market booming at the time. Talk about that a little bit more in a second.
But President Trump said on his way to Florida that they could have stopped the plague. They could have stopped it, but they didn't. He asked if that friction meant phase two of the U.S.-China trade deal would no longer happen. Trump said he wasn't even thinking about it and that he had many other things on his mind. The status of the trade agreement between the two economic superpowers. Well, we got the first phase of that was signed. It was supposed to have gone into effect earlier this year. I'm not quite sure what has actually been purchased or how much of it has actually been processed or used.
We'll have to follow up on that next week. See if we can find the status of Chinese purchases of these American products.
Yeah, because China will buy at least $200 billion worth of U.S. goods over 2 years. And it also addressed the intellectual property protections and forced technology transfers. So we'll see. We'll see about that. And, you know, we mentioned it about their stock market surging. China has acted to cool the speculative frenzy in its $9.5 trillion stock market. It had an eight-day surge that fueled worries of a new bubble in the making. Like, they're all bubbles. So it's not a new bubble. They're all bubbles. Signs of Beijing's unease over the rally's speed emerged late yesterday when a pair of government-owned funds announced plans to trim holdings of stocks that soared this week. I don't know. Anything else about that, Dave? You're the stock guy.
Well, you know, we know that Chinese officials have a number of reasons to want a rising stock market. I mean, just the wealth effect alone could help revive consumer demand, and higher price shares, higher share prices, excuse me, certainly make it easier for indebted companies over there to better finance themselves. What I find interesting is this optimism among investors spilling over into Hong Kong more recently, helping to ease concern that China's new tightening grip on that city will end its status as a financial hub. And I still think there are some legitimate doubts about where that's heading in the long term, but certainly in the short run, you know, there doesn't appear to be overall concern that at least there's no fear of an imminent shutdown of those that city's markets. So the China's National Council for Social Security Fund, that's the country's national pension plan, said it intends to sell a stake of as much as 2% in the People's Insurance Company of China. I found that interesting. The fund oversees about 2.2 trillion won. It's equivalent to about $314 billion in assets. Saying the sale was part of its regular divesting activities. Of course, that stock dropped over 7%, the most in 5 months. So, interesting things going on everywhere, Melody.
Yeah, certainly is, and it always cracks me. Well, all these, you know, particularly China's stock market, they were all supposed to be doing, you know, the economies were the best economies in history.
Yeah.
But then when everything is bad, they roar.
I know, right?
You know, and there's something wrong with that picture there.
Did you, I know we're winding down on the program. Did you see about this Wendy's franchisee?
You know, I was just going there.
is that you know? infuriating?
The CEO of large Wendy's, everybody knows Wendy's, where's the beef?
we know now.
They diverted $1 million in Paycheck Protection Program loans. Now, that was meant to keep workers employed, but they decided to buy a new house. Andrew Levy, the CEO of the Starboard Group, which operates 101 Wendy's locations, instructed former employee Sandy Adler to list some of his personal employees as corporate employees to pull off the scheme. Adler alleges in a new whistleblower suit that was filed in Florida, the effect of this in view of the PPP funding was to defraud the United States and the SBA, the Small Business Administration. Starboard in total received $9 million. He didn't use all of it, Dave, only one. But he received $9 million in total through the federal relief program that was created. And the franchisee oversees 3,200 employees. But a million, Dave,
Outrageous.
What can I say?
Outrageous. Shouldn't have been able to qualify at all, but loosely defined the provision in the CARES Act that I thought was supposed to limit these loans to organizations with less than 500 employees. But interesting, that million went to finance Levy's new home in Montana, according to Adler. Levy apparently also allegedly instructed her to lie to the creditors, the landlords, vendors, and suppliers, telling them the company had not received PPP funding and couldn't meet its financial obligations. Of course, as we know, several large publicly traded companies came under fire for essentially gobbling up massive portions of that federal funding that was intended for struggling smaller businesses, again, with fewer than 500 employees. Big chains like Shake Shack, Sweetgreen, and others were literally guilted into returning their loans after the first round of PPP money quickly ran dry. So,
yeah. I just wonder how many other corporations did the same thing.
Really.
I'm sure they all did it to some degree. I mean, it's free money. It could be turned into a grant and never have to pay it back. We'll be back on Monday, ladies and gentlemen. We're out of time, so I want to make sure you're safe this weekend. And until then, good night and God bless.
Bye-bye.
That's too bad.